Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Welcome to The Fighter's Voice. I'm your host, Don McGuire. We have a tremendous special episode for the listeners today. You know, those of you on iHeart and Univision, I hope you're listening in, because this is truly a sensational afternoon for the Fighter's Voice. You know, when you think of the sport, you look at all aspects of it, and I kind of like to bring legends, champions, and the up-and-comers of the sport. I like to share all of them, from Amis to the top, to be quite honest with you. But this one young man has always been on my radar. He's a person I met before. Actually, I gave his management the phone number to him to get in contact with him, but we'll get to that in a second. But this young man is truly a tremendous aspect of the sport. He's continuing to grow as a warrior, and he's continuing to make a name for himself. With that being said, I want to welcome the one and only Sage Northcutt. Sage, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show. Appreciate it.
Well, it's truly an honor. You know, my friend, before, like I told you before we went live, you know, the show kind of touches on all aspects. You know, you've made a tremendous name for yourself in the sport. How hard was that on Sage Northcutt as a young man coming up in this sport, in this business, to try to be a teenager, to try to understand life, but yet compete as a man?
You know, so I guess looking back, I had my first professional fight for MMA actually when I was in high school. So I was fighting at 17 years old in high school. And then coming into my college, I was studying to be a petroleum engineer at Texas A&M University. And then I got a call from Mr. White, actually. He was doing a show, Dana White, looking for a fight. So he happened to be at actually one of my fights for a league called Legacy. And he was there and invited me to fight for the UFC coming up, for UFC 192. So everything, I guess there's a lot of stuff going on at one time, but I loved every single minute of it. Getting to be studying as a petroleum engineer at the same time while fighting for the UFC, while trying to make straight A's, and I guess having to do all that at the same time, it was a lot of work, but it was definitely been worth it, and it's definitely a lot of fun.
Most definitely. And the fight I think you're referring to is Legacy Fight Night 42. You know, and coming off of that night, a lot of people stated that Sage Northcutt was probably going to be the next lightweight champion in the UFC. When you hear things of that nature, and you hear people talk about the style and the characteristics of your fighting ability, you know, Sage, what does it bring to you in heart and in mind?
You know, it's super kind of people to say that, and I believe that me as a fighter fighting for the UFC, I believe I'm the youngest fighter on the roster right now, and I came in as being a 19-year-old fighter for the UFC, so being so young, one of the youngest in history, people would think it'd be a lot of pressure, but it actually gives me confidence. It shows me that they're saying that I have the potential to be the UFC lightweight champion of the world. And I believe as a fighter, you have to actually believe that too. So I believe I'm going to be. And now I've actually withdrawn from school, and as a petroleum engineer, I'm taking a break from that. And I'm focusing all my time on my fighting. So training at Team Alpha Male and making myself better.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up. I've shot at Tam a few times. What is that relationship like for you, Sage, at Tam? I found Tam to be so family-oriented. You hear people talk about these different gyms and they say things, but to truly be a part of it, you know, you're right. Faber, it was funny. I was there for, I was shooting Road to the Octagon, Faber versus McDonald, and it was back when Dwayne Bang Ludwig was still there. And the funny thing about it was, you know, they went into their little group meeting like they do, and I went to walk away from that situation because I'm the photographer, you know. That's the team stuff. And Uriah screams at me, "Hey, where are you going, Don?" And I said, "I'm going over here. You guys got a meeting to go through." He said, "Man, get over here. You're family." And they actually let me sit through one of their team meetings. What is it about Tam that has Sage Northcutt looking at as family, as a place to call home?
Oh, thank you. You know what? You're right. Team Alpha Male is very family oriented. Everybody is just like family, like you said, like brothers and sisters there. Everybody, as we see it, one person gets better on the team, then the next person gets better, the next person. It makes you better. So you grew up together as a team, getting better and better. And I think Mr. Faber, he is so genuine. He's so nice. And he's such an incredible teacher, incredible coach. He's helping me out improve. He's worked with me pretty much every single day, helping me get better and better. And the parts of my game that I need help with and piecing everything together, he's got the right tools for that, and he's helping me accomplish that. So it makes Team Alpha Male awesome, awesome fit for me.
Yeah, you know, well, here we are in the year 2018. You know, you're set to walk out to UFC Fight Night 126. What does this night mean to you, Sage? I mean, you're coming off some ups and downs in your career. I never consider, you know, people call them losses. I don't call them losses because I think it's a lesson. I think people get a lot of confusion in that because, you know, you look at anybody, they go and they do a 9-to-5 job, and they come home and they're content with life. You guys take it above and beyond that, and so you put yourself out there, and you're a true warrior in all aspects, so I consider them lessons. But what does UFC Fight Night 126 mean to you going against Thibault, I can't even say his name, Thibault Goady, I guess is his name, the way you'd say it. What does that night mean for you, Sage?
Yes, sir. You know, I train, so I think it's been like a little bit over 6 months or 7 months possibly training at Team Alpha Male. So, like, coming into my last fight, I have my full camp training there. I've been improving every part of my game, getting better, transitioning better, make myself all around a better fighter with Mr. Faber, with all the coaches at Team Alpha Male, and all of Team Alpha Male. So I think I'm super looking forward to it. I'm so excited. Looking forward to it. Fighting in Texas, actually, not too far away from my hometown in Houston. So it's going to be in Austin, Texas. I'm looking forward to that. And obviously, I think not only just this fight, but the future fights to come up. There's two fights down the line, the three or four, wherever it might be, I'm always looking to get better and better and keep improving. So I think that's great because I'm so young, only being 21 years old now, that I have all the time to keep improving and keep getting better, and I have so much potential to do that.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that. Now, I kind of want to take it a little bit back because you've been in the sport so long. I mean, you look at a lot of people don't realize how long you've been in it, but by age 15, you had already received your third-degree black belt in Taekwondo, your second-degree black belt in Kaju Kendo, I think I said it right. And at 19, you know, you had your purple belt in BJJ. You know, those things take years for people to develop. You know, so at what age did Sage Northcutt actually get into the sport?
Yes, sir, you're right about that. It does take a lot of time, for sure. I started martial arts when I was 4.5 years old. So I started off doing karate and Taekwondo, and then Kaju Kendo also since I was a little kid. Me, my sister, and my brother, we always competed together around the world. So that's been a great experience. And then since I was maybe 11 or 12 years old, started wrestling here and there in between competing around the world for karate tournaments and kickboxing tournaments. So I started mixing in some wrestling, mixing in some jiu-jitsu. And then when I was like 15 or 16 years old, that's when I started training the wrestling jiu-jitsu more frequently all the time, and mixing in the karate and the boxing and the kickboxing, mixing it all together for MMA. And then when I was 17, I had my first professional MMA fight. I believe I'm saying that correctly. And then 19, I had my first UFC fight. And then now I'm 21 years old and looking forward to this next fight.
Yeah, and it's a tremendous respect. I mean, you look at your record, and it's phenomenal. You've been in, you know, you started, I believe, it as an amateur in 2013 in the mixed martial arts aspect, but you've been long before. You know, when you think of family, you think of a young man growing up, you think of playing in the park, you think of him hanging out with his buddies, playing video games and things in this era. But, you know, your family was quite the different aspect. How much did it mean to you, Sage, to have that interwoven family, that closeness, that bond, considering your brothers and sisters are also in the sport? You know, how much did it mean to you having that bond with your family in the beginning and now?
You know, having a bond with my family in the beginning and now the whole entire time is huge. At least for me it is, because having your family support you, my mom and dad support me, my dad being actually one of my coaches in the UFC and has always been one of my coaches since I was a little kid. So that's always been a huge support. And then also getting to grow up with my brother and sister doing the exact same sport and having the same mindset as me, that are goal-oriented, trying to having a goal and trying to go out there and accomplish that goal and then do something so much greater than that too. So I think it's so supportive of my family and definitely helps out for sure.
Yeah. When you look at your career, you know, like we said, you've been in a long time, and you look over your shoulder and you look at all the accolades, all the awards, everything that you've accomplished. You know, when sometimes in life we get overwhelmed, and, you know, you're very young. You're 21 years old. I have a 32-year-old son. So when you look at it in that aspect, when those days come that Sage Northcutt wakes up and he's feeling overwhelmed, or, you know, he gets a little caught up in everything that's going on, who do you go to kind of bring you back to where you need to be, son?
You know, obviously, as I say, my family has my best interest for me. So obviously, I can go to my family for that. They're the ones who raised me and fed me and helped me become who I am right now. So definitely can go to my family. And then I think keeping my faith strong in Jesus Christ helps out too. So that way I remember my purpose and what I'm doing and that I have plans to prosper for my future and how something to look forward to.
You know, I look at your fight record, and there's a lot of tremendous fights on your fight record. But the one that I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the one that I think truly, in my opinion, was the fight that you truly realized that, hey, I'm tremendous at this, and I've got great ability, was going back to the Francisco Trevino fight at UFC 192. To me, that fight right there was one of my favorite fights. Would you say that was a fight that Sage Northcutt truly got more focused in the sport as a man comparative to any other fight before that?
Absolutely, yes, sir. You know, coming in from I guess having all the other fights I had, now coming to the UFC, the biggest and best fighting league in the world, and just coming in like that, and then having my first fight knocking out my opponent, that was great for sure. And I think at first people underestimate age, but you know, I've been training my whole life. They think that I came into the sport, I guess coming to the sport without having years and years of experience, which is true. I am still gaining experience every day. That's why I'm going to keep getting better and better and learning and improving for sure, and I have so much potential to keep doing that. But also I have competed on national teams since I was a little kid and traveled, and I am a competitor. So I guess having that experience as a little kid definitely helped out, and I can agree with that. Yes, sir.
You know, you're a tremendous young man, and I know that you're young at heart, but you have the heart and the mindset of a wise old soul. You know, what would you like to do in the future to give back to the sport, to keep it going for people like yourself who have truly found a base in life, a heartfelt moment, something that they love and can see that they can persevere at? What would you like to do to give back to the community that has created such an environment for you?
You know, there's probably so many things you can do. I'm sure you've heard of the saying that the words are mightier than the pen. I guess they're mightier than the sword, or I'm not sure exactly how it goes. Yeah, exactly. So your words are very powerful, and, you know, I guess kind of like what Mr. Faber does, getting to share your experiences that you've had for so many years, and that you've, I guess, the accomplishments that you've done and what you've experienced, and be able to share that with people and help them out and help them become better and share those same things, how you accomplished that, and be able to make other people better, make them happier, lift them up, and make them, I guess, feel what you felt growing up. And I think that'd be awesome to be able to do, for sure.
You know, we kind of touched about it on it a little bit earlier. You know, how much has there, I can't even speak today, I'm so tongue-tied with you on here, because I honestly, there's very few fighters that I truly respect their career, and your career happens to be one of them. But when you speak of Uriah, oh, you're welcome, son. When you think of Uriah and you think of Chad Mendez, Andre Feely, and, you know, the name goes on, Donald Roberson, all these other people over there at TAM, who would you say has been the greatest inspiration for you being a part of that team, who would you say would be your favorite sparring partner?
Favorite sparring partner?
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? I mean, getting as far as all of them, it's incredible, an incredible experience to train with any of them, for sure. And, you know, it's a team, so Team Alpha Male is like you said, like family pretty much. So every one of them help. I get to get help by them. We get to help each other out. Mr. Faber is in the UFC Hall of Fame. I think he's been doing so much and helping me out so much that just the team that he built up, he should be getting the accomplishments for what he's been able to build up and be able to have Team Alpha Male. And without him, the team wouldn't be there. So.
Yes, most definitely. He is the GOAT, you know, and it's tremendous that I've been able to shoot him as many times as I have. And you're right, you know, he does leave this. He reminds me of James Krause in a lot of ways, and some people would probably say no. But, you know, James Krause is this gentleman that you can talk to him on the phone, you can talk to him through social media, text, whatever, and everything's cool. But the moment you're standing right next to him, it's almost like they put off this presence that is overwhelming. Me and Zach Cummings were talking about it, and Zach is his business partner. And, you know, I get that same feeling around Uriah Faber. Do you think it's that, you know, what he has done for the sport has truly paved the road and in all aspects for you young and up-and-coming fighters?
Absolutely. I think so for sure. And not only that, if you've ever experienced, I guess, being at Team Alpha Male, like I'm sure you've seen, everything's so structured. He's so organized. He's such a smart person and so helpful that it does pave the road for the younger fighters out there and for greatness too.
You know, I haven't been at the new gym, so the old gym I've been at, you guys have moved, I guess last year you guys moved to the new gym, but I'll be out there in April, I believe. You know, I guess the sponsors are setting a tour up for me to go through TAM and a couple other places. You know, I'm looking forward to it because I really love that aspect of that gym. You know, Chad Mendez is, of course, the gym clown, in my opinion. The guy always makes me laugh. But, you know, when you look at, yeah, he's truly funny. You know, sometimes, and it's weird asking you this question because you're only 21 years old, but you've already lived a full life in this sport. But, you know, when you sit back and you look over your shoulder, did you ever perceive yourself being where you're at, you know, in such a short period of time, Sage?
You know, you never know about the time and things happen so fast. But, yes, I visualized since I was a little kid. Once I made my mind up that I wanted to fight for the UFC, I've always visualized it. Just like I visualized being the best in everything I do. So being the best in the sport karate that I competed in my divisions, in my weight class, in my age divisions, everything. Being the best in my weight class now at 155 for the UFC, I'm looking forward to that and making myself the best and being the UFC world champion. So, absolutely.
I love that, you know, but I kind of want to dig back a little bit because, I mean, the style that you can, you know, you possess is tremendous. What was it that made Sage Northcutt kind of step away from Taekwondo and the other aspects that you're in? And the reason I ask is I've interviewed, you know, several world-famous professors. I've interviewed Muay Thai practitioners. And, you know, there are certain aspects of the sport that you fall in love with, and you were tremendous at Taekwondo and other aspects of the sport. What made you initially make that decision to transition over into mixed martial arts?
You know, I think one thing is you always want to learn more, so I'm always up for learning. And that's why I was studying to be a petroleum engineer, because the amount of work, the amount of math, the amount of sciences, it's always about learning. So competing around the world for karate since I was a little kid, it was an awesome experience. But doing that, I also wanted to transition in and start doing a little bit of wrestling. Like I'd be fighting out there in tournaments competing, and I'm like, man, I just hit this guy. I just hit this guy. Now I want to take him down to the ground. So I was like, this is pretty interesting. So I started training the wrestling, started training jiu-jitsu, and then I was so interested with doing submissions now, learning how to defend submissions, do submissions. So it kind of now is just piecing it all together, and that's what I guess got me into it, was I want to take it to the next level and next level and make it better.
Yes. And I think that's a very well put way. You know, you look at, we went from UFC 214, you had two opponents that both canceled out on you. You stepped into UFC Fight Night 120. You came out, you know, with a unanimous decision over Quiñones. What can people think, you know, when they think of UFC Fight Night 126? What can they expect from Sage Northcutt?
You know, I always try to be super exciting out there and obviously have a good time, put on a great show. I'm always looking to go out there and finish off my opponent. So I'm not just coasting through rounds or doing anything like that. I'm looking to go out there and put on a great performance. So I think they can expect me to go out there and see improvements in my game, how I've been getting better and improving, and I'm looking forward to showing that.
And I think you will. You're a tremendous athlete. Now I'm going to kind of, like I told you before the show, we kind of take a little sidetrack. You know, Sage, take the sport, and I know it's kind of hard to do because you've been in it your whole life. If you know, you take the sport, you put it to the side, who truly is Sage Northcutt, the man, away from the cage?
Oh, thank you. You know, I guess there's so many different things, but I like to go out and be adventurous, I guess, out in the wild, go up in the mountains, hiking. I love doing things outdoors, like swimming, fishing, going out riding four-wheelers, dirt bikes. I've always done that since I was a little kid. But fun stuff like that, and also love to meet people. Like, for instance, the fans for the UFC, it's always been such an honor, and I've always loved meeting fans for the UFC because it's always great experience for me to meet people, and I enjoy it so much because without them, the UFC wouldn't be where it is now because they tune in because they're there at the fight. It's what makes the UFC so cool.
Yeah, I actually got started 21 years ago in boxing and then transitioned to the UFC, I think about UFC 3, and I've been with, you know, the promotion ever since, so it's been a long and illustrious career for me. You know, one thing I've always, you know, told myself, when I got you on the show, I was going to ask you. You know, you look at the generational issues that we're dealing with now. You've got kids on their cell phones, kids that hit their parents, kids that feel entitled. And then here I got Sage Northcutt, a young man that's 21 years of age, and he truly loves life and has a great passion for life. What advice could you give to those kids out there, Sage, that are struggling, that are looking for their identity, or just looking for a path to get back to where they need to be in life, like you have been, you know, yourself, and you've been successful at it?
Thank you. You know, you always have something to look forward to. So even if you have a hard time that's going on and you're dealing with a problem or hardship, wherever it might be, something bad happened, you know, a lot of times something bad happens first before something great comes out of it. So, and there's been so many great people that have accomplished so much that had hard times where they might have felt like the lowest time in their life where they're down and they don't feel like they can ever accomplish anything, but they come up to be some of the most famous people in the world or the greatest, smartest people around. So, you know, you have something to look forward to, and just like the Bible says that God has plans to prosper you and to give you hope in the future. So you always have to keep that in mind that without that hope, you gotta keep that hope to be able to know that you have something to look forward to.
Yes. Now, with religion, speaking of religion, do you feel that you would be the same Sage Northcutt today if it wasn't for religion?
You know, I don't think so. It's not just about religion. For me, how I stand is I believe that Jesus Christ died on the cross for my sins, and he rose from the dead, and he is my Lord and Savior. So that's what I believe. And I've seen and had miracles happen before that have been astonishing. So I think that I guess when I read the Bible or I hear scriptures that apply to me, I like to apply those scriptures towards my life and then towards me. And like it says, God doesn't deny his word. So when you do that, then God has to stand strong with his word. And that's an incredible thing.
Amen to that, brother. You know, one thing I truly admire about you, like we talked about earlier, you look at Conor McGregor, he kind of changed the sport. He made a lot of fighters think that They needed to have those antics. They needed to have that mindset to get the fight. And in some situations, it's worked. You know, it's what the fans ultimately wanted, so those situations worked. Then you get, as of late, a young man by the name of Colby Covington, who I've had on my show every one of his fights in the UFC. I've interviewed him just about every fight, you know, that, you know, after each and every fight. And you see the antics that he's doing. You know, I had him on my show 2 weeks ago, and to my, I mean, it blew my mind how much hate I received, how many people asked me why I'm having him on the show. What do you think that type of antics is doing to the sport, Sage?
You know, I'm not sure what kind of, I guess, hate people are saying about it or what they're saying towards him. I have no idea because I'm not in his footsteps right now or not in his place, so I can't really talk for that matter. But all I know is that your fans out there and the people that support the UFC, the UFC wouldn't be where it's at without them. So if you're getting angry at the fans or you're getting angry at the city or whatever it might be, you got to look at it as the way as in, hey, look, these people are what keeps the UFC so entertaining because they're there to watch you. They're there to put on a great show. Without them, you wouldn't be out there fighting. Or else you'd just be fighting another guy, and it's no different than fighting on the street pretty much. So I'm not sure exactly what kind of hate he's receiving, so it's kind of hard to talk about it. But
well, I'll be quite honest with you, and one thing I am is transparent. You know, a lot of people ask me how could I bring on somebody that is disrespecting a country, a person that is taking his antics farther than Conor McGregor. How can I let my show, you know, have somebody on that is disrespecting the sport in that manner? And I, as a journalist, feel everybody has a voice. I mean, did I deal with the hate? Yes. Do I understand it? No. But I also got to look that we're in a different generation than when I grew up in. When I grew up, you know, you had a problem with somebody, you went behind the school building and you guys knuckled it out, and then you guys had dinner at each other's house, you know. So right. Here, you know, being 51 years old in 2018, it's been it's opened my eyes, to be quite honest with you. The way the generations have changed, it's almost like, I told somebody one time on my show, I used to talk about the good old days. But I can't talk about that, you know, to you types of fighters nowadays, because you guys will never know what the good old days are. You know, and that's what's sad about life and, you know, seeing things, you know, change generation after generation is you see it's almost like society is digressing in my eyes in some aspects. You don't have families having dinner together anymore. You don't have that family time on Sunday like you used to. There's things that are, you know, slowly disappearing from life. Would you say that that's changing society as a whole, Sage?
You know, just, I mean, as you put it, I would say so, because that's what it sounds like as you put it. And I wasn't back there in the good old days, like you said, so I don't really know what that's like. But from the sounds of it, for sure. I mean, now you're right. The world has been changing over time, and I guess how people interact. People get so caught up in the world having to do their work or they're on their phones or whatever it might be. They get caught up so much with different things that sometimes it's distracting, and you kind of get drawn away from your family or from your friends or from what your goals might be or whatever it might be. So, I mean, I could agree that the world is definitely changing for sure.
Yeah, you know, most definitely. You know, one thing that I told myself again that, you know, because you're so respected in the sport, you know, how hard is it for you to stay and remain humble, being in a sport that is truly changing and going more towards the entertainment aspect?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Thanks. I really appreciate that. You know, I think you can still be entertaining with being humble at the same time. So, I mean, I know everybody's different, but it is about going out there and fighting and performing. So, and I always try to go out there and put on my best performance, put on a great show for everybody and go out there to win and finish off my opponent. So I think that, yes, a lot of people have how they are. There might be the people that talk a lot of trash out there. Maybe someone doesn't talk a lot of trash, but But yes, what was your exact question again? I kind of got sidetracked.
That's all right. I got caught up in what you were saying. You answered my question. But the thing of it is, that's what I love about this show is we can talk about just about anything. You know, and I know in life your father is your number one idol, the person you look up to, and your family members. But if you were to set them aside, who would you say in the sport you looked up to, you emulated, or you would like to follow in their footsteps, Sage?
You know, coming into the UFC, I actually had never been actually to a UFC fight before my first fight in the UFC, which is crazy. And I've watched fights since I was a little kid, but I guess actually knowing the fighters is a totally different story. But like styles I've looked up to has been like Machida, for instance, Don Cerrone, who fights so much, he's always entertaining, puts on a great show. Fighters like that I've looked up to since I was little. George St. Pierre, who's an incredible fighter and goes out there and dominates. So they've been, I guess, fighters that I've looked up to from their styles.
Yes. And you picked some tremendous ones. How, you know, looking back, you were five fights in, and most of them predominantly were for legacy. But five fights in, you get the call to the UFC. Take me back to that night that Sage Northcutt's sitting in the hotel the night before the fight after weigh-ins and realizing, holy crap, I'm here. This is really going to happen. Because most fighters in the sport don't get a call that soon. And at that age, to boot. So sitting back and having a reflection on that, what did that night mean to Sage Northcutt?
You know, that night was the start of something great. So it was so exciting for me. It's such a huge honor, and it's still such a huge honor just to fight for the UFC, be associated with the UFC. The UFC is so incredible. So I was so excited, and I'm still so excited. The same kind of excitement I was for my first fight in the UFC, that's how it is every single fight. I'm so pumped up, and it actually might be even getting more exciting too, because now I'm able to train full-time and know how I'm improving my game, getting better, and becoming a better fighter all around. So it was just so exciting. I can't really describe it. It was like you're so pumped up, so excited to go out there, and there's so much excitement.
beyond words. You know, the thing that I'm truly grateful you came on the show, but the thing that I got a lot of people asking me, you know, what would Sage Northcutt's most memorable memory be in his career date? I got about 20 or 30 people asking me that question in the green room. So with that being said, what would be your most memorable night?
You know, most memorable night for the UFC, correct?
I would assume so. See, I have a green room in my studio, which means people are listening to the show, you know, via us live, but they're not in, so they can speak with us. But they want to know.
Okay.
Most people want to know, what was your most memorable fight?
You know, I think my most memorable fight was my last fight, actually, and I think that my most memorable fight is going to be my next fight and then the next one after that. So I think every single fight that goes on, every single experience that goes on, for me, it's the most memorable. It's the most recent. It's going to be the most memorable because it's something great that's going to happen, and I can't wait for it too. So actually, the most memorable is going to be the future.
Well said, because you're just getting started. You're just creating a future. And that kind of leads me into my next question. How does it feel to be 21 years old and already know that you've created a legacy for future generations of your family, Sage?
Thank you. I really appreciate that. It's such an honor to be able to be at the spot I'm at right now at such a young age, and I feel so blessed, and it's definitely a blessing for sure to be in the spot I'm in.
Truly is. You know, Sage, it was truly an honor to have you on my show today. I know your time is very valuable to you. You're getting ready, you know, for this next fight camp. But
thank you so much.
There's one thing that I always like to do on my show because I think it's a must-be, you know, and I think a lot of people just forget about it and don't have the time, and it's not like they're meaning to, but, you know, I know you're the type of individual that likes to pay thanks for the people that have got you where you're at today. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to toss the microphone over to you. So if there's any friends, family, just anybody that has helped you get to where you're at today and you'd like to pay him homage, the floor is yours, my friend.
Absolutely. All right, sounds good. Thank you, by the way, for doing that. You know, I'm so thankful for, obviously, my family, my mom, my dad, having a great brother and sister, everybody that's so supportive. And I'm so thankful for my sponsors, too, that have been sticking by my side, Labrada Nutrition. They've been a big sponsor of me since I was a little kid and have been there by my side, helping me out, giving me the right supplements, keeping me in tip-top shape, ready for my performance. Actually, at my fights for the UFC, they actually send me like a care package pretty much for every single fight with different things after I make weight to be able to feel strong and also throughout the week, too, so that way I feel strong, I'm ready. And I always feel great. And I know there's been a few times I've been sick out there fighting, but I've always felt incredible. So definitely want to thank Mr. Lee Labrada at Labrada Nutrition, his son Hunter, his whole entire family. They've been amazing. Also, the sponsors that I have for the UFC, which is Toyo Tires and Reebok. They've been amazing. Metro PCS also. Metro PCS is so great because I'm actually talking to you through my Metro PCS phone right now. And I know that pretty much wherever I go, I have great service. And it sounds crazy, but I actually drove up to Tahoe from Sacramento. I'm up in the mountains, and I'm actually almost towards one of the peaks of the mountains, and I'm with a friend of mine in the car. I forgot what service he had, but he didn't really have any service at all, and I had, like, I think I had 3 or 4 bars, almost full service. I was able to make calls, and so definitely I'm so thankful to be a part of Metro PCS, part of Reebok, who supports me, and Toyo Tires, absolutely. Also, just the whole entire team Alpha Male, that's great. They're like family to me, and they help me out. And Mr. Faber, who's been helping me out consistently, helping me become a better fighter, all the coaches of Team Alpha Male. I guess last but not least, which no one really knows about as of now, but I've been staying with someone that Mr. Faber introduced me to, and it's actually some neighbors of his, and their name is Mr. Pete and Mrs. Jan. And they have 2 sons, which is Anthony and Daniel, and they're great friends of mine, and they let me stay at their house, and I've been staying with them the whole entire time I've been training down here. So at Team Alpha Male, Mrs. Jan's been like my mom pretty much. Mr. Pete's been like my dad here, and their 2 sons, Anthony and Daniel, have been like my best friends. So I've been having a great time and have felt like I'm at home here. So it's been a great experience.
You truly can't get more blessed than that. You know, it's a tremendous aspect of life when people truly do care and reach out and help others. And that's one thing I try to do in my life is give without expectation. And that's how I started this show years ago, was just to give back to the sport that's put food on my table and a roof over my head, to give each and every fighter a voice. And it's funny you mentioned Metro PCS, because it's kind of a running joke with James Krause, because James Krause owns like 6 Metro PCS locations. So we kind of
really?
Give him a bad time, and then here you are repping Metro PCS. It's tremendous. You know, Sage.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, it's funnier than crap. You know, one thing, I will give you a little bit of advice, you know, because you're a tremendous warrior, and this came from a true veteran of the sport, and we kind of touched on it earlier before I let you go. You know, someone asked James Krause, and I hate to keep using him, but he's a tremendous aspect of my life, but they asked him, what's it like to be 22-7? And he said, I'm not 22-7. I'm 22-0 with 7 lessons learned. So if there's any advice that I can give you moving forward into this tremendous career you have, never look at it as a loss. Always look at it as a lesson. Because, my friend, you're truly creating greatness for yourself and a legacy for your family. And, you know, it's truly honored and humbling to have you on my show today. What I'm going to do now, Sage, I'm going to toss the microphone over to you, and you can let the listeners and your fans know where they can find you on social media, or if there's anything else you'd just like to add to the program, the floor is yours, my friend.
All right, sounds great. Thank you very much. And I agree with you. That's a great one by Mr. Krause. So thanks for telling me that. All right, so my Instagram is SuperSageNorthcutt. It'd be awesome just to be able to talk with anybody that's listening and be able to share your thoughts. If you want to say hi or you're going to be at my fight, whatever it might be. But my Instagram is SuperSageNorthcutt. My Twitter and my Facebook are both SageNorthcutt. So I think I'm going to be creating a YouTube channel here soon, so I'm looking forward to that. And just want to get that out there. So I'm definitely looking forward to that and interacting with everybody.
Most definitely. My friend, you truly are a transparent gentleman in life, and you truly are a tremendous warrior on the rise. I wish you the best of luck in your fight at UFC Fight Night 126. I hope you get your arm raised and move forward in life. You truly are a blessing to my listeners and to my show. Thank you, and God bless, Sage.
Thank you very much for having me on your show. I appreciate it.
Honor's all mine. God bless you, brother. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Super Sage Northcutt. Man, I don't think I've ever had anybody call me sir on my show before. It's kind of different, but it shows the unique caliber of the type of individual he is. And I'll tell you what, I'm glad I was able to get him on the show. Got tongue-tied a couple times. And I think it's the humility sometimes in some of these fighters. It just, I calculate these questions in my head and they throw me off, and I get a little tongue-tied and tongue-twisted. I don't get fanboyed by any means. So, you know, I think he's a tremendous attribute to the sport. With that being said, we're going to jump to another great attribute of the sport. And a gentleman that, dude, I still go back with this guy to Bellator 150. You know, him against Julian Marquez. Probably will go down as one of the greatest fights that I've ever watched and seen. I mean, you got two guys going toe-to-toe that neither one of them gave up an inch. And it was just a tremendous fight. And it shows a warrior mentality in this young man. So let's go ahead and give Chris Harris a call. Maybe we can get him. You know, I'll tell you what, live shows, you just learn to deal with things that don't happen, and you just go forward. We'll try to give Chris another call. This kind of isn't working out too good for me today, but we'll get it working here. That's the wonderful thing about live radio. You just got to roll with the punches. Let's go ahead and try to give Chris another call. I think he's answering. I just don't think that it's going through. I'm going to take a short commercial break. I'm going to go ahead and text him the number, and when we come back, we'll have Chris Harris on the line.
What up? It's your boy Slone Bone of the Mo Thugs Movement, part of the Bone Thugs and Harmony family tree, the 86ers brand ambassador. Check it out, though. Listen. In a world full of followers, be proud to be different. Be an 86er. So what I need y'all to do is go to the 86ers.net. We got the dopest apparel, men and women. Everything you need for a fresh start. I'm talking tees, zip-ups, tanks, hoodies, and the best hats at a price nobody can match. I'ma ask you this, though. What do your clothes say about you? If you don't know, come to the 86ers.net and find yourself out. And a special shout out to Don McGuire, the host of the Fighter's Voice. Salute, big homie.
My man Nelly, Murph Lee, Puff Daddy.
Welcome back to the Fighter's Voice. We're going to try to get Chris Harris on. I'm having a little technical difficulty getting him on. I think it's on my side. He's answering the phone, but it's just not going through. So let me go ahead and text him this number real quick. I got a hold of his management, but we'll see what we can get going and get Chris Harris on here for you. As I know, a lot of Chris Harris fans are listening. I promise he will be on the show. We've got the time to do it. And I'm going to text him again right now. You know, that's the thing with live radio. There's not much I can do about it with the internet. So, you know, I'm using a plug-in into the studio in New York. We're going to go ahead and try to call Chris one more time and see if we can get it to go through. Fighter's Voice. Chris, if you can hear me, I sent you a text in your Facebook inbox. Can you go ahead and call that number so I can get you on the show? Yeah. He hung up, so he's going to go ahead and call. In the meantime, we're going to go ahead and take one more intermission until we get Chris on. I don't want to waste any more of your time, so we'll be right back.
Yeah. Yeah. Yo. Haters ain't fond of me, that shit don't bother me. It ain't no stopping me, constantly dodging hypocrisy. I just be flowing.
I apologize for that, Chris. I don't know what is going on with the internet today. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Hey. It might not have been you guys. It might have been me, actually. I was down. I'm still at the gym right now. Done with a training session, so I was still inside the room, and it's a concrete room, so it might have been me.
Okay, cool.
But I came upstairs.
We got you on now, nonetheless, you know, and... it's a tremendous thing. You know, I love the aspect of being a person that has interviewed you time and time again. I've kind of got to watch the awakening of Chris Harris. You know, when I first had you on the show, you were kind of just a quiet, timid, shy guy. But you go back to your last fight, and your opponent kind of, you know, tiffed you off a little bit there. What was it that... you know, was inside of Chris Harris that finally allowed the silence to break for the man to finally stand up and speak his mind?
That fight, we had a little bit of a previous animosity or whatever. We were supposed to fight once already. And, I can't be mad at him, you know, whatever. I missed weight. That's my fault. You know, I take responsibility for it 100%. I shouldn't have done that. But the time that I missed weight, you know, every fighter has the option to take a percentage of a purse or whatever they want, if they still want to take the fight or not. Kyle decided to not take the fight. He got his show money and went home the first time, which I can't be mad at. My fault, like I said. So going into the second fight, his reasoning for leaving, okay, first of all, Brandon, one of my teammates, told me that he said that he wanted to take the fight still, even though I was overweight, because I was, quote-unquote, or he thought I was an easy win. Okay, and that kind of offends me because if you look at my record or you look at any of my fights or you look at anything I've ever done in fighting, I've been beat before. I've had guys that have, you know, have outclassed me in certain areas or whatever. But I'm not an easy fight for anybody. You don't watch my fights and say I'm an easy fight. That's not the impression my fights give. Like, it's my goal to not be an easy fight. You might beat the crap out of me for 3 rounds, 5 rounds, for however long the fight is, but I'm not going to be an easy fight for anybody, okay? So that was a little bit offensive, but still, it wasn't. Going into the fight, though, he was at weigh-ins. We were both joking back and forth a little bit, you know, running our mouths, getting kind of loud and happy, having fun. And I thought it was all... that it was all in good, you know, in good sport. I wasn't trying to be any disrespectful or anything to him, and I do owe him an apology if he felt like I was being disrespectful, because, I mean, his wife was mad after the fight and all kinds of other stuff. But I didn't mean any disrespect at all. I thought the talking back and forth was in fun. You know, at weigh-ins, he was talking back to me just as much as I was talking. Then at going into the fight, when we're standing there across the cage, you know, he started saying stuff to me first. You know, he looked at me and was like, he pointed at me and was like, he worded something and pointed at me and then pointed to the ground. And I was like, oh, yeah, you're going to take me down? I already know that. And then he said, no, you're going down. And then he put his hands on his cheeks like I was going to sleep or whatever, you know. But even up to that point, I thought it was all in good fun. I wasn't saying anything to be disrespectful to him in any kind of way or anything like that. That's not the person I am. That's not the type of character I am. You know, that's not the way I try to live my life. So I didn't mean any disrespect by it. And if he felt like I did, then I apologize for that. But yeah, that's what led into it, though, I guess, was just him. He's the first opponent that's ever said anything or been mouthy, even if it was jokingly. You know, I've never had an opponent say anything to me as far as, like, talking crap, whether it be disrespectful or all in fun. No one's ever done that at all. So,
yeah. You know, it's just, I found it kind of comical, because that's not Chris Harris. That you always let your fist and once the cage door locked prove who you are. You know, I kind of talked about it earlier with Sage Northcutt. You know, the thing that I admire, you know, your fight probably still is probably one of the best fights. The fight with Julian Marquez of Bellator 150 is still probably one of the fights that still sits in the top of my mind. Do you feel, Chris, that you've done so much, but yet you're still struggling to get to the top? Do you feel that you're being overlooked in a lot of aspects, being that you've gone out there, you beat veterans like Cortez Coleman, you've had other tremendous fights, you beat Kurtz, who's no joke, you've done everything that there is possibly to do. Do you think that, you know, that you're being overlooked in certain aspects, my friend?
Overlooked? I don't know. I don't spend too much time stressing over all that or thinking about all that. Like, I'm pretty sure I probably said in your interviews before that I do this, and I chose to do this because I love the lifestyle of it, not necessarily the fighting. I don't necessarily enjoy getting in a cage and fighting somebody else in front of people. I mean, it's a necessity in my sport. I do enjoy doing it, don't get me wrong, but that's not, like, being able to beat somebody up is not the reason that I train every day in the way that, you know, the way that I choose to live my life. That if I was told I could never fight again, my training schedule would still be exactly the same. Granted, I could pay my bills and stuff without an income, but that's the reason the fighting is necessary, is to get a paycheck. I can't get paid to train. If I could, I would. But so with that being said, I don't really stress too much on it. You know, I knew that question was going to come up with Julian. You know, I knew that. Everybody that knows me and that saw mine and Julian's fight has said something to me about it since he's blown up, you know. And a lot of people seem to think that I'm supposed to be mad or jealous about it, but or have some type of ill feelings about it. Like, I have nothing but joy for that. I'm glad Julian's doing well. You know, he's a good guy. He's taking advantage of all the opportunities given to him, you know, and not even given to him, that he's earned, he's worked for, you know. I've slipped up, you know. I had a good opportunity when I fought Jordan Young, and I didn't perform. You know, you put the shoe on the other foot. Julian had a good opportunity when he fought Phil Hoss on the Contender Series, and he performed. So, I mean, I have no negative. I try not to hold on to any negativity at all, really. But I mean, as far as am I getting overlooked or whatever, it's if I always tell people, if I you know, if I make it to the big, to the UFC, to Bellator, to somewhere, wherever this takes me, great. But if I don't, if I'm 35, 40 years old and decide that it's time to quit thinking fighting is going to be a career, then I will have no regret, you know, if I didn't make it anywhere in my fighting career, because I got to wake up every day and I got to enjoy my life and I got to do what I love to do and be around people that I love to be around. So being overlooked isn't a stressor for me at all, or whatever is going on. It doesn't matter. Whatever's going to happen is going to happen. All I can do is show up and keep beating people up.
Yeah, that's why I continue to rock my Chris Harris hoodie, my Chris Harris shirt, because it.
Wait a minute now. You wrote me on Facebook Messenger, and your profile picture pops up, and that's not a Chris Harris hoodie anymore. Pretty sure I see some Glory fellas standing by your side.
Oh. But hey, man, you know, I got no problems with it.
I love Glory. I love James and all those guys.
No, but let's take it back a second since you chose to go there with me. We'll take it there for a second. When I got out of the hospital after having major back surgery right before Thanksgiving, the first picture I took and posted and made my profile picture was me wearing a Chris Harris shirt, and I tagged Reese in it and Mikkel in it because they had sent it to me because I'd been bugging the hell out of them for my new Chris Harris shirt, and I'd been bugging the hell out of them. So that was the first picture I took coming off of back surgery and posted it as my profile pic. And I'm the only one that's ever had the balls to walk into Glory wearing a Chris Harris shirt. So,
you and me, that even extends to me, right? I did my whole quote unquote training camp, if that's what you want to call it. I mean, I've been in a 6-year training camp. I don't take time off and train harder for a certain fight. I train the same all the time. I started going out to Glory when I was getting ready to fight Cortez Coleman, and I don't know. I want to say that I never wore one of my own shirts to the gym, but I know I didn't the first couple times I went. If I ever did wear one, it was after I was going a couple weeks, because I didn't want to be looked at as some, you know, who's this guy wearing his own T-shirt in the gym, blah, blah, blah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I love all those guys. It was great.
But when I rocked it, even when Crabtree commented on it, love the shirt, bro. And here I'm standing with 12 of Glory's greatest warriors.
That's hard to get a word out of Wynn anymore.
Oh, I know, bro. He's so busy.
He's so busy.
He does comment now and then. But you know, the one thing that I know about you, and I hope you don't mind me saying this, I know going into the Cortez Coleman fight, you know, Chris, you were sitting at about 50-60%. You know. And you went out there and you beat a true veteran of the sport. Cortez is my homie. I'm transparent. I'm not going to lie about that. You know, it amazed me that you beat that man going in there probably at about 60%. When you look at that fight or any other fight, you know, what would happen if Chris Harris went in at 100%? I mean, bro, the way your style is just so dominating, you know, you can tell the sport is your life, and it's a passion that you'll always have and you were born with. You know, what did it mean to you walking into there at 60% against Cortez Coleman?
The way that I look at it is I was 100% of what I was going to be that day.
Wow.
So maybe I can perform better on a different day. Maybe I can't, but that was the day that I was, that I showed up to fight Cortez, and what I had is what I had to give him. With that being said, though, that fight, warming up in the back, I didn't say anything to anybody. The only person that knew anything was wrong with me was my cut man and the guy that wraps my hands for me all the time. He's been there for me since my very first amateur fight. Every fight, he comes out of town with me, everything, just to wrap my hands. He's couldn't ask for a better guy, you know, to have around me. But so he's seen me for every single one of my fights, and he's the only one that knew something was wrong with me. I was kind of going along with, like, if I don't speak it's not happening, you know. And I'm warming up, you know. I'm screwed up, everything like that. And then I'm starting to warm up with David, with Caveman, and he freaking jams his finger. I'm talking like probably dang near to the second knuckle deep into my eye while we're sparring. Never poked anybody in the eye in his life, and it's like we're like two fights away from mine and Cortez fight. Like, and then that fight ended right when he poked me in the eye. So we got one fight for me to clear up my eye, right? I'm standing back, LFA, the river's like, you know, go up to the stage and we'll call your name. You've got 5 minutes or 5 seconds, then you walk out or something, right? Like when Cortez goes to walk out, like I just knew that I was about to walk down that ramp to go and get knocked out by Cortez, right? Like, that's the mentality I had when I was standing there. Like, it's crazy to say, but, like, that's the only thing I can think about. Like, this dude is about to get a win over me and knock me out because of all these things that are going wrong, right? Like, it just felt like everything that could go wrong did go wrong. And then I'm standing there, you know, they say my name, I count to five like River says, and when I start to walk, I'm still thinking all these bad thoughts, and then when I walk, I think Cortez probably is the one that took me out of that mindset, because when they brought us to the center of the cage, and we were standing there looking at each other still, I'm sitting there thinking, like, I wasn't scared, obviously. I've been beat up plenty of times in life, you know. I wasn't scared to get beat up, but I just knew that I was walking down this ramp to go get fed to Cortez and get my ass beat in front of everybody. But we get brought to the center, and the minute we're done, and the referee says touch gloves or whatever, we touch gloves, and Cortez says, let's have some fun or something like that, I think is what he said. And, like, at that moment, it just, like, all those bad thoughts just went away, and it was time to fight, I guess, you know, and what happened. But anyway, sorry about the rant. But you say 60%. Like I said, that was 100% of me that day. That's all. I mean, on any given day, you know, I have never had anybody bring out what Julian brought out of me in Bellator. I've never had that again. I've never performed that well again. And it's because of the opponent that you have there. You know, your dance partner makes a big difference in how you perform. And I honestly feel like Julian brought the best out of me, and I haven't had that again yet. So but that's what I'm getting to, is the 100% thing. So that was 100% of me that day when I fought Julian. Then the next fight I had was 100% of me that, you know, it's on any given day it can change, I guess.
I feel you. You know, would you say that stepping into C3 fights, you know, is going to be, you know, a pivotal moment for you, Chris, you know, against, I'm probably going to say his last name wrong, but I'm going to give it one hell of a try. Chance for Contre. Did I do it right? Did I say it right?
I don't know how to say it either. I mean, I always say a ring counter. I always say Chance ring counter, but I don't know if that's how you say it or not. I've never asked him. I've been at fights with him before, and I've known who he is. I've known about him for a while, but I don't know how to say it either. So, sorry.
Yeah.
So go back to the question. Sorry.
Yeah. The question is, would you say this is going to be a pivotal moment, and the future of Chris Harris? Come on, Chris.
I have no idea. I have no idea. I mean, I don't try to think about all that extra stuff, you know, about what's going to happen after this, or I just take it one day at a time, you know. And for me, do I think it's going to be like a pivotal point in my life and in fighting and in martial arts and all this? No, I mean, it's another fight, you know. I'm going to go in there, I'm going to fight, and I'm going to enjoy myself, you know, and I'm going to, you know, do everything I can, but as far as my career goes, will it be a pivotal point? It could be. You know, he's a very good opponent. You know, he's another one of the top ranked guys around, I guess, according to Reese, and he trains at a good gym. You know, so I mean, as far as my career goes, could it be pivotal? Yeah, I guess. Any fight could be pivotal, right? Every fight is pivotal. I mean, every fight's the most important fight of my life.
You know, since I'm on iHeartRadio and Univision now and a couple other subsidiaries, I kind of want to give a quick synopsis to my listeners. You know, if you're listening, you know, you got to understand Chris Harris is probably one of the most humble guys you'll ever meet. You know, and honestly, Chris, you remind me of Liam McGarry. I mean, the guy, especially when he fought Lenton Vassil, they're two buddies in life. And, you know, they came on the same show in the same day, just different segments. But Liam said, hey, man, I love the guy. I'll eat dinner with him before the fight. But once that cage door locks, I'm punching in the time clock. It's time to go to work. This is how I make my living. But he said, once the cage door opens, I'll be the first one to buy him a beer. And that's truly how you are when you look at life. But the thing that amazes me the most about you is this sport is more than a fight to you. What actually embedded this warrior mentality in Chris Harris? What made you realize that, you know, like you said earlier, even if you didn't have a fight coming up or you never got another fight to come or reach the years that you can't fight anymore, you're still going to be doing what you do now. What instilled that in you, Chris? Don't give me no BS answer either, bro.
I'm trying to decipher the question, kind of. Like, so are you asking me what in my life gave me the perseverance that I have, or are you asking me what gave me my passion for mixed martial arts?
The passion is already there. What I was getting at is, honestly, you know, I feel if you never fought again, like you said earlier, you still would be doing the same thing that you do now. You would still be getting that daily grind, and you'd still be doing, you know, the warrior aspects of your life. What initially led you to that? What made you want to be the person you are today, whether you fight or not again?
I enjoy learning, you know, figuring myself out, and I enjoy challenging, being put in situations that are challenging and overcoming them. And I enjoy seeing other people come to the realizations that they can do the same thing. And just the challenging, you know, the challenges involved in this sport, in this life, I guess. The only example I can give, I guess, is wrestling. Like, I'm a striker. I love to strike. You know, it's what I want to do in my fights. But wrestling practice is probably one of my favorite things to do, and that's because it's one of the hardest things I've ever done. To go to a real, you know, down, dirty, gritty wrestling practice where the doors are locked and everybody's in there, like, you know, sweating in their sweatpants and hoodie, and no one can take anything off, and like just that grind. It wrestling builds something else, a different animal in you, you know. And growing up wrestling, like, I didn't get to do that. I wish I would have. But that challenge is what I enjoy. The grind is what I enjoy of it, and that's what keeps me doing this. Like I said, you know, I do it because I enjoy that every day. I enjoy pushing myself every single day. And what instilled that in me, that refusing to break or whatever, refusing to quit, like, I would venture to say it was the way I was raised with my mom. Like, we never had anything easy, you know. She's doing great now, but we've been through a lot of things, and my mom's one of the most mentally, you know, strongest people, and that's where I get my, you know, my heart from too, is from her. She, you know, she loves everybody no matter what, and I've seen her in some of the worst situations in life and pushed through it, you know. So I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm looking for what's going to break me, I guess. I don't know, and I haven't found it yet.
That's tremendous to hear you say in that aspect. You know, I know what you mean, you know, because life is crazy. You know, I can't even explain why I ended up where I'm at. You know, you look at where I was born in the projects, with a single mother and six brothers and sisters, to, you know, having my mother die in my arms. And you always look back and you reflect on life, and you try to get an understanding of who you are and where you're meant to be. And I guess it's best just to live in the moment and live your dream the way you see fit. You know, one thing I has been brought to my attention recently that I think is a tremendous attribute. You know, we talked about it on the show before that, you know, you can only become as good as the people that you're training with. And when you're the best person in the room, you know, it's kind of hard to better yourself. But lately you've been getting in some time with Caveman Rickles, and, you know, you both have been helping each other out. How has that helped you grow as a warrior, Chris?
Are you asking how is having David around, Caveman?
Yeah, with both of you working together. Yeah, both of you working together to strive to get to both where both of you really truly want to be.
Well, I've only as of late become an asset to him and been able to help him, you know. Ever since I've been training, ever since I started fighting, he's been here to help me and guide me, you know, and been the veteran around. But my entire career, I've had him, you know, him there to help me. But now the fact that we can push each other really helps. Like you said, I guess what you're asking is that helps both of us, because he has somebody in the room that's going to push him, and I have somebody in the room now that's going to push me too. You know, that's and it kind of, I've always like accredited why the guys at our gym get good really fast as like or why we all continued to get good, you know, me, David, Brandon, Ty, all these guys, was because it's like we're all, it's like a ladder system, I guess. And I'm sure every gym is like that, you know, like one day I'll come in with a new trick that I learned and I'll be using it on everybody else, and everybody else wants to figure out how to beat that. So then somebody comes up with a way to beat it, and then you got to figure out a way to beat that. And it's just like when you have somebody that's there to push you, I guess. I mean, that's all you said in the beginning, is like, I can only be as good as the people I'm surrounded by.
Yeah, and it's true. You know, I've been at gyms across the country, and, you know, it's kind of weird. You know, here I am just a photographer and a show, radio show host, but I do a little matchmaking here and there, and to have gyms from across the country say, hey, I've gotten this fighter as far as I can. We'd like to get him in so-and-so place. Can you help us out? And that's one thing the show's allowed me to do, is to be able to get, you know, fighters that their management feels that they've reached their pinnacle at that gym. And it happens. It's nothing, you know, bad towards a gym. It's nothing bad. But there's warriors like yourself that get to a point in your career that you need to surround yourself with better, you know, training partners to step your game up. But no matter what, Chris, you've always been a grinder. You will continue to be a grinder. And I love what you said earlier was, you know, even if you didn't step up in the cage, this would still be your life. And that just says true testaments about who you are not only as a warrior but as a man. You know, you see the things in life in front of you, and you're going to continue, you know, because that's who you are. But if you had to explain yourself to my listeners and to the fans of Chris Harris, what this sport truly means to you, what would those words be, my brother?
What does the sport of MMA mean to me? It brings out, it brings light to all the doubt that people have about themselves or in themselves, you know. It brings out the truth in someone. It'll teach you who you are, truly who you are, you know, when nothing else matters, you know. And the most simple way to put it, I guess, is like while you're getting punched in the face, you have really no time to think about what everybody else thinks about you and your image towards everybody else. You know, you have to be, you're honest with yourself at that moment because nothing else matters, you know? And, I haven't, come across very many things that give me that feeling in life, you know, that truly bring out everything inside of you, I guess, that don't come out any other way besides getting in a fist fight, I guess.
I could truly understand that. You know, I look at the sport and it's, you know, it's changed, it's evolved, it's continually changing. And, you know, I put a question to, because, you know, I know you practice BJJ as well. And so I'm going to kind of ask you an out-of-the-box question, kind of take the limelight off Chris Harris for a second. You know, about a month ago I started posing a question. I had Jenna Bishop, black belt in BJJ and a world champion. And I've had several other tremendous women practitioners on my show. And then the other night I had Jared Dopp, I had J.W. Wright, and I had Ezra Lennon on. And I asked them the same question that I'm about to ask you. Do you feel that there is, you know, an inequality and sexism towards women in the sport of BJJ? And if so, what do you think we need to do to fix it?
An inequality and sexism. I guess I don't. I'm sure there is, because there is in pretty much everything, regardless of what people try to say and how they try to cover things up. You know, there's that issue in all aspects of life. Not just BJJ. But
from a practitioner standpoint,
that stuff. What do you mean as far as
Let me break it down. Well, like Professor Jenna Bishop,
as far
said,
as coming a black belt. Okay.
No. Like Professor Jenna Bishop said, she said that a lot of times she goes places and, you know, the old part of jiu-jitsu doesn't feel that, you know, women should have the right to roll. They don't feel that they don't want to roll with them because, you know, they're not strong enough, or they don't look at them as the same as they would a man who is a black belt and a professor in that aspect, in that regard.
Well, then that, as far as I understand, would just show that those people haven't understood how jiu-jitsu was created, right? Because from my understanding, it was made with leverages and using the tools you have, so that size doesn't matter. So if this person thinks that because she's a girl, her jiu-jitsu is not going to be as good as my jiu-jitsu, then they're that pure jiu-jitsu. That's what it was created for, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yes, sir.
But it still goes back to what I said, like what you're saying about, oh, I'm not going to roll with this with her because she's a girl. She can't help me get any better because she's a girl. She's not strong enough because she's a girl. That problem extends to other things in life too, not just Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Well, the reason I posed the question to you, because like I said, I've been posing the question to a lot of practitioners lately, and then yesterday Joe Rogan had brought it up on his podcast talking about the same issue. And so it's kind of becoming a relevant issue in the sport. And another issue that came out, and I kind of want to get your thoughts, and then we'll move back into the sport and the retrospect that you're on here for, was the other day they put out an article from the sanctioning body of jiu-jitsu saying that, you know, brown belts and purple belts will no longer be able to teach in any regard. Do you think that's going to hinder the sport?
I had no idea about that, but I would say so, yes. Eddie Bravo wasn't always a black belt, right? And he created his own system, basically. Has proven to be better than some other black belts jiu-jitsu, you know, and I'm sure he was creating these different things and different style that he has while he was a purple belt and a brown belt. So if he had to wait till he was a black belt to show anybody else this, then it probably wouldn't have been around as soon, I guess. So I guess the point that I'm saying is just because your belt's a different color doesn't mean that you don't look at things or understand things in a different way than someone else. So everybody has something that they can add to the pot.
I agree with you. And I asked Professor J.W. Wright and Professor Jared Dopp the same question. And they were like, well, first of all, even if this does, you know, come to apparition, there's no jiu-jitsu police that are going to go from gym to gym.
Yeah, that's that's what I was going to ask too. Like, how are you going to? But that's why I kind of stopped before I said my answer, because that was going to be my answer. Like, well, how are you going to? Like my coach, our jiu-jitsu coach here is a brown belt. He's not a black belt. And you're going to come here and tell him he can't teach? Like, you're going to stand at the front door and stop all of us from going in the room when it's time to train? Like, what are you?
It makes absolutely no sense, you know. But, you know, Chris, we're getting short on time here, and I know you just got out of training or you still got training to do. You know, I'm looking at the fight. I think it's going to be a tremendous fight. I can't wait to see you back up in the octagon. You know, for your fans out there and for my listeners out there, what can they expect out of Chris Harris come CF3? Or C3, my bad.
Oh, they can expect the same thing as always. Anyone who knows me knows what to expect. I mean, I'm going to show up and I'm going to give whatever my 100% is that day. And I'm going to have fun doing it. And hopefully it ends up being a good night.
It does too, because you're a true testament to what it is to be a warrior, brother. You know, like I said, I see thousands of fights. And, you know, the two things that I admire most about you is, one, you truly, you know, give props to a brother in life. And that's just how things should be, you know. And I'm talking about Julian Marquez, you know, because a lot of people say, you know, I'm proud of you while they're stabbing you in your back. But Chris Harris says, I'm proud of you while he's patting you on the back and truly means it. You know, and that fight will ever, forever be ingrained in my head, because it's just truly one of the most pivotal moments in cage fighting that I've ever seen. I've never seen two true warriors just stand there and neither one of them give an inch. It says a testament about who you are and what this sport means to you and how you roll, and I give you kudos for that. You know, my friend, it's always an honor to have you on my show each and every time. I know I give you a bad time, I like messing with you because it's fun to watch you grow and become a little bit more open vocally, because you haven't always been that way. But the thing I love about it is I will have your back through and through. I believe in you as a warrior, as a man in life. You truly, you know, set the bar high for a lot of people, and, you know, it inspires me to see you grow and get where you need to be, and that day will come soon, and if you haven't already, you know, got there in your heart. But I'm going to hand the microphone over to you, and any friends, any family, any social media, or just anybody you'd like to thank or anything you'd like to add to the show, the floor is yours, my friend.
I thank you for having me and all the wonderful things you just said about me. I thank everyone that I've come across in this sport, and anyone that's helped me become a better person in life, period, not just in this sport, but my family, you know, everyone that helps me continue to become a better person. That's it. I mean, and then, yeah, that covers everybody. I think that statement does. Anybody that helps me grow and become a better person, thank you. Anything they've ever done.
I love it. Now, where can my listeners and your fans find you on social media, Chris?
Chris Harris MMA, I believe, is everything on all of them. Yeah.
And, you know, just one more. I got to take one more shot at you before I let you go, bro. You go through and look at almost every one of my profile pictures, and I'm rocking a Chris Harris hoodie. I already went and looked myself all the way with it. I'm standing with Keith Jardine to you name it. I'm rocking my Chris Harris hoodie, and bro, that's the way it's going to be for life, because you truly are a true warrior in this sport, and I hope you get everything that is deserving to you. You truly have blessed my show time and time again. I wish you the best of luck at C3. You truly deserve it, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce his name, but best of luck to you, my friend, and I'll let you get back to training. Thank you for humbling my show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me, as always. Whenever you want to talk again, let me know.
I appreciate it, brother. God bless.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was the humble Chris Harris. You got to understand our relationship. Chris isn't one that talks. So getting Chris to talk is just a tremendous attribute in itself. You know, he's a warrior that believes wholeheartedly in his mission in life, whether that be stepping back in the cage or not. He's just a true warrior. You heard it yourself. He said, even when I get to be 35, 40 years old, I'm still going to be doing the same daily grind that I'm doing right now. And that's just a true testament to who he is as a man, not just as a warrior. You know, and TKO Sports Management, they truly got a tremendous stable of fighters. He happens to be one of the shining pinnacle aspects of that corporation. And I respect him for bringing him on my show each and every time. You know, Chris is truly a unique individual. If you haven't seen him fight, I suggest you do so. The interview is kind of different because Chris is truly a very soft-spoken person, and I like giving him crap, and he doesn't really speak very much in life. So what we got out of him was a true testament to who he is, and I'm glad he was able to come on the show today. With that being said, I want to thank Sage Northcutt for making an appearance on the show. I want to thank Chris Harris, TKO Sports Management. I want to thank my sponsors, Finished MMA with Juan Martinez. Without him, the show wouldn't happen. The 86ers.net with Alfred and Freddie, United Way Merced, and last but not least, Affliction. On that note, I want to wish each and every one of you a tremendous night. And, you know, since we talked about moms on the show, let's go ahead and play a little Tupac on the way out. You have a good night, and God bless.
You all appreciate it. When I was young, me and my mama had beef. 17 years old, kicked out on the street. Though back at the time, I never thought I'd see a face. Ain't a woman alive that could take my mama's place. Suspended from school, scared to go home. I was a fool with the big boys breaking all the rules.
shed tears with my baby sister. Over the years, we was poor than other little kids. And even though we had different daddies, the same drama when things went wrong, we blame mama. I reminisce on the show.